Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, I think Frequent listeners know there are not many opportunities where I choose to solo, because I so enjoy having guests that we can kick it around. And actually, this show really is about the missions and passions of my guests and to satisfy and bring new content to our listeners. However, that aside, I've decided for the balance of this month, once a week, we're going to do some solo work, particularly on a topic that's hit me so at the core of what my consulting and coaching is about, but primarily because I feel people aren't getting it. So consider this perhaps a piece that's a bit of a rant, and I'll try to keep it balanced with the content and the knowledge that surrounds it. And I had the opportunity to give a presentation about earlier last month, and I called it The Great Talent War, Demographic Shifts in Motion and What We Must Do to Prepare in Advance and Not Succumb. So that's kind of the platitude or the platform I'm on. And really what I did during that presentation was really review some striking information on a sea change of numbers of talent that's cut across generations as well as experience sets within organizations, in particular with an eye on people's readiness to step onto leadership. And also then the ramification places on those of us, particularly those of us that are leading change in organizations, on development, training, recruitment, and retaining the talent that we either already have and are developing further or that we attract to come into our organizations. So that entire presentation was with a group of 15 very interesting people. It was really to inspire a conversation on whether or not their businesses were ready for this, and are there provocative methods and measures, maybe some alternative approaches to that R word. And you know what that means, the retirement word, which I don't like to use, but rather reinvigorate, reimagine, re-engineer, re-inspire. The area of knowledge management, meaning how do we retain all the know-how, know-what, and know-when that we have within organizations. And it's just not the explicit things that we have, that many companies, all the right things that we look to codify, write processes down, provide manuals, provide directions for those of us who read them. But also it's really the tacit knowledge that comes as a result of what it comes no other way than but by experience. So how do we harness that knowledge that's with those who are more experienced? And I don't mean necessarily years of experience, but wisdom that then translates to wisdom so we can run our businesses and operations. And then really what my message to this particular audience was the potential and really the probable need to recover during the Great Talent War. In other words, this talent war is not coming, folks. We're in it right now, but yet people don't see it. And this is about recovering now, not until you get to that hitting the wall or stopping yourselves in your tracks. So that's, let me phrase up, that's where we're going to head. And let me stop right here at the onset and tell you what prompted me or got my attention was two books that were sitting on my bookshelf, which I have a lot of them, of course. And I realized when I pulled them off the shelf, they were two of my friends, shall we say, from, and I looked at the inside covers, 1982 and 1981. So we're talking 30 to 32 years here. The first one is a book called Megatrends, 10 New Directions Transforming Our Lives. It was written by a futurist named John Naisbitt. This book sold gajillions of copies, and all of us were walking around with it underlined. It was kind of fun for me to open up and see what I underlined over 30 years ago. And these trends spanned everything from us looking to be a traditional industrial technology to an information-based technology, from short-term to long-term business horizons, from being centralized into how we ran our organizations to decentralized. Mind you, remember from 1982 to now this day and age, we didn't know or have the internet. We didn't have at that time email. We didn't know or think that virtual employment relationships, work from home, work from the airplane, work from your car was going to take such a stronghold. And even in a sector that Mr. Naisbitt talks, going from institutional help to self-help. I mean, the number of businesses in the 30 years that have exploded around self-help work, let alone around the readership and the books in that area. So that was one book. Another book was New Rules, Searching for Self-Fulfillment in a World Turned Upside Down by Daniel Yankelevich. And Yankelovich, Skellig, and White, those three individuals, were profoundly important to doing consumer behavior research all the way to societal research back in that times. Again, we're talking about the 1980s. And one of their premises was something as simple as, I own my own world of art. In other words, 30 years ago, who would have known to realize that the whole term career, and trust me, ask anyone from the younger generations in this day and age, the word career has a negative connotation about it. It might present stasis or being stuck or being in a trap, or, by the way, having to get it perfect the first time out, which we know with the change in the workforce and the opportunities, you don't want to be viewed in that stuck world. But at any rate, between Yankelovich and Naismith, those two key books, and then, of course, there are others by Alvin Toffler, Future Shock, Power Shift, and the like. The book I would reference now, or the body of work that I've been exposed to in the last year or so, courtesy of looking at my investment portfolio and the inspiring of my husband, who, as many of you know, is involved in the art world, which has been completely turned upside down, both art and publishing world, is work that's being done by Harry Dent and his company. The particular book is called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper During the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019, so that's coming up. But a book that predates it that Dent wrote back in 2013, just a year ago, called Spending Waves, The Scientific Key to Predicting Market Behavior for the Next 20 Years. The scientific key to this. And guess what Spending Waves is tied to? Demographics. And I mean the sheer numbers that are in our workforce by certain categories. So that's where I'm going to go in my remarks here as we look at this idea of the great war on talent, the changes in our people environment that's so important, certainly to any of you that are leading change in your organization. And for those of you who are listening and thinking about a career or a job or an opportunity in the future, and certainly any young people, of asking this question, what in the world am I getting myself into? Back early in April, late April, by the way, here in Tucson, the Tucson Regional Economic Opportunities Organization, TREO, they issued an update to what they call the Economic Blueprint for our region. And the key recommendations this round, the first one was done about 8 or 9 years ago, they focused in four areas. And I was delighted to see the number one area they picked to focus on was talent, how we in this region need to meet the demand. The second was infrastructure, a path for economic growth. And there's a play on words there. Infrastructure can mean everything from our highways to our rail systems to the airport access. Third was the business environment, winning the competitive race and looking at our practices in business and attracting and retaining and growing new business, from licensing to you name it. And then fourth, of course, healthcare, who could not mention that, and our desire here in this region to become one of America's healthiest regions. Caught my eye was that first one, talent, and how that was so important, is important, and this transcends just what's going on here in Tucson, of course, for those of you who are streaming or picking up on this podcast after the fact. But let me quote someone who is the chair of that talent committee. It said, in our region, a recent employer survey revealed approximately 2,500 job positions open right now, and that the challenge in front of leaders is getting the right people with the right talent to fill these positions and position our community then to meet the future demands of our employers. Keep in mind that those 2,500, that number was focused on the 20 major employers here in Tucson. And since 85% of our employers, per the enrollment at the Tucson Chamber of Commerce and other Chamber of Commerce, have less than 25 employees, bet your bottom dollar that number is significantly understated. So what are we saying here? We're saying we've got jobs that are open, but we don't have people or don't have a process to get them to match right. Yes, indeed, that dynamic is at play. But more importantly, that there sure aren't the numbers to fill the roles. And I don't mean just people that don't have the right skills match, just the pure raw numbers of it. This is where I'd like to go. Facts and trends that are absolutely bona fide out there. You can look at the U.S. Census data and, again, go out on Survive and Process or view Harry Dent's work as a demographer. That's his discipline. Is that really, if we thought that the full effect of us 78 million baby boomers, as my prior guest and I certainly are in that category, how much we have shaped the U.S. economy and the social structure that we now enjoy here in the United States, also the work ethic, the like, be aware that the effects of a significantly smaller Generation X that's following us are going to be felt. So you've got 78 million baby boomers, the tail end of them, the numbers are starting at something like 10,000 a day across the United States, really are retiring or stepping out of the for-pay, for-earn profit sector, and that this next generation, Gen X, is 11% smaller. So there are just going to be fewer people buying the kind of things, investing, or wanting to launch the kind of things that perhaps this bigger generation has been involved in. And by the way, the Gen X values have been significantly different than those of us in baby boomers, how they manage their career, their times, and so on. But more importantly, then, is perhaps this silent effect, then, this almost a winter season that's going to happen in the consumer life cycle. If you looked at what I mean, this consumer lifestyle, and we're going to put this presentation, by the way, up on thelarsengroup.com. It's Larson with an E if anyone would like to look at these charts. It reflects what, you know, some might say, well, that's obvious, that if you look in the continuum of our own age, that some of our investing happens, let's say from age 25 to age 30, we go from being in apartments to starter homes. And then by the late 30s, early 40s, we trade up in homes. Around 40 to 45, that's where much more investment is in furniture. But when we hit our 50s, this whole thing, particularly those who are blessed with the opportunity to be parents, comes to play called college tuition. And regardless of how much you've saved, guarantee I'm in this space right now with one child in college and another stepping off to a school almost in a pre-college scenario, that your investment portfolio starts looking a little bit different at this phase of our life. And then as we crest into that mid-50s, the reality of how much or differently we spend for automobiles, big purchases, then the role of hospitals in our 60s and beyond, not willing, of course, that we're focusing more on our health. Hopefully we don't have to spend like generations before us in that. But then the desire perhaps for a certain sector of population to enjoy vacation or retirement homes, even in the 70s, the whole cruise ship industry. But you look beyond that, 77 beyond, you're talking about prescription drug investments and then elder care and nursing homes. So that spending pattern, again, look at that flow. What's happening in our country, though, again, with our traditionalists now in the nursing homes are passing on, baby boomers, we're living longer, and many of us don't want to go that route even. We want to spend our days in a tight community with family or those they love on our home, on our own, hopefully as intimate as possible, that within these next 15 to 20 years, where the real power that's going to influence the market is the millennials. 78 baby boomers, but look at the millennial. Think, do you know what that number is? It's 101 million in the United States. And folks, this number isn't going to change. They've been born, they're in motion, and this is what's moving out at us. That's why this idea I'm saying to those of you who are listening to my discussion here, these waves are already in motion, and are you paying attention to them as a leader? Or as I say, from an opportunistic standpoint, if I was going to develop a new product right now, do I really want to target baby boomers? Then maybe what I should really be looking for is getting as much money in front of millennials, because they're going to catch that wave. Example. As I mentioned, Nighthorses.com, my husband's firm, is while there's been a very lucrative business in selling high-end art, quite honestly, we're into a winter season on expensive original art. But that doesn't mean we want to not plant the seeds with millennials who will become the future buyers and investors in high-end art. But what are you going to do at this phase? Perhaps this is now where you do giclées, which is prints of image on high-end canvas, or high-quality prints that can be framed, knowing that eventually the millennials are going to step in and want to buy originals. Classic story, Toyota Motor Car Company. What do they first have in the United States? Essentially used cars that let's get our youth that can afford a used Toyota to create brand awareness and connectivity so that then when they were in the position to buy a new car, they had already converted. This is not your mother's Buick. And again, I can say that with a deep sense of awareness, having been at General Motors for 15 years in the U.S. car business. The sheer power then of millennials, the numbers are going to show, and also that they bring with them very different spending interests and needs in this changing world that we have. Now, as I mentioned, baby boomers, here we are. We do not or cannot ascribe to that R word, the retirement, just like our traditionalists before us could, or they wanted to, or they aspired to. But then when you ease out or you create an encore career, that's really what people want to do. They want to play to a passion. They want to leverage their experience or wisdom and, by the way, have impact plus have some sort of monetary award. Big opportunity for those of you that are in the space of looking at the demographics of your workforce to say, do I really want my baby boomers to walk out the door? Is there some other model that could keep them engaged so I can absolutely capitalize on their wisdom but give them the freedom in their day? Because that's what they also would like to include. As I said earlier about millennials, they may not really relate to the C word, career, because that invokes a stasis or traps of a comfort zone like those that they've seen caught and negatively impact. Think of how many millennials have most likely seen their parents or their older siblings or other generations within their family invest 20, 30 years in a given industry, a given career, a given company, only to see it evaporate, not just because the company gets in trouble, but perhaps that role is no longer relevant to adding value to what the company offers, or the work has been taken offshore, short of their going offshore to follow it. So this idea of constant reinvention, is it any wonder that our young people are changing jobs every 6 to 7 years? Are they not really wisely preparing for a different future than some of us that have been more established would know to do? So the youth, of course, are now sorting through all these options. And the way they sort through the options, by the way, is doing and experimenting, because they do not necessarily view, or nor are they on the paths that they follow that are viable in a changing world. Just as my other colleagues on the show today, myself included, that the path that got me to be the opportunity to be an executive at a very young age in a very research engineering intensive environment is a path that perhaps is no longer viable. So this whole idea of charting a new way. Let's talk about them, really what this means to that big shift, as I mentioned earlier. You realize that currently today, give or take, that 40% of private enterprise employees are within that window to retire, or hopefully reinvent, reimagine, reinvigorate within the next 10 to 15 years. 40%, again, 40% of private enterprise employees due to retire, step off, or do something different within next 10 to 15 years. This is a call to action, folks. This is an imperative that is not something you shuffle off to your HR department, per se. This is an imperative for everyone in the leadership level, and I spell to this every opportunity for those of us that are participating in academia to plant the seeds of opportunity with our youth as well to know they can step forward. So private enterprise, 40%. Any guess then of what government or government-affiliated organizations are feeling? The number is 60%. 60% of government or government-affiliated organizations were going to be retiring or stepping into the R phase within the next 10 to 15 years. Guess what? Most of those types of organizations are typically not the type that attract millennials. Typically not the kind of organizations that have freedom, that have entrepreneurship, that are more flexible in the way they do. And for good reason, by the way, our U.S. military organizations, Department of Defense, some of our services that cross public sector, public and private, that can't necessarily be as flexible for the veracity of what's playing out. But you know what? Most of those government organizations may not have sufficiently addressed things like process improvement, productivity, knowledge management to buffet this change that's going on across our country as aggressively as some of the private businesses have had to during the downturn since 2008. What I'm saying is that many of our organizations, if they're still in existence, had to jump to back in 2000, 2007, 2008 for the last few years to hunker down and get prepared for the next big wave and next wave of opportunity, by the way. This isn't all negative, but as I mentioned here on the show, we often talk about that chaos is a terrible thing to waste, that while things are up in the air, now's the time to move out and shift. The right organizations have done that, or they've been doing it. They've seen the waves of sea change. Of course, those waves may have been masqueraded in the form of people not buying their products, people no longer traveling. But the wise have also realized that, oh, by the way, the aging and changing of our workforce, we've got to keep our eye on it. Mind you, there's an awful lot. You can go out on the internet and type 4 generations in the workforce. And what you will see is a plethora of wonderful, interesting information about millennials versus traditionalists, how we interact, how we engage, how we learn differently. Some are digital immigrants, some are digital natives, etc. But nowhere in the mix do people talk about the sheer numbers, and quite honestly, that the behavior patterns really don't matter if you don't have the numbers when you're talking about running your businesses. I'd also say from my own experience that some of the stereotypes that get leveled on our younger generation of, quote, them wanting to become CEO overnight or be an executive, let's get honest. I ran with that for probably 15 years before I did make executive. That was every bit me for some reason, maybe in utero. I had that. It surprised in me, you know, inspired in me that I wanted the office in the corner, and doggone it, I was going to get there by 30, which I did. But the point being is that some of the stereotyping, the dynamics I see people speak up today, I'm like, well, yeah, I think I demonstrated some of that the various time. It was not because I was a baby boomer born at a certain time. To this big shift then, why I think it's very important for businesses to recognize this 40% private enterprise and 60% government affiliate organization is, you know what, we're missing the messages that are right in front of us. Let me quickly reference one article that comes out of the New York Times. It was an article back in January that said, retailers ask, where did the teenagers go? And the article talks about the total upheaval at Abercrombie & Fitch and what's happened to their marketplace, the type of products that the big stores are no longer attracting the youth coming into the stores because, and of course, all the right things are presupposed, that fashion sense has shifted, that the retailers haven't kept on top of it, that youth are buying now more over the Internet. Oh, by the way, they just don't have money because they don't have the kind of part-time jobs that we allowed our youth to have because those jobs have been superseded by older people that need the role to maintain their families. Fascinating article, again, is the New York Times, January 31st, 2014, that talks about what Abercrombie's and Fitch's response to this was, of course, was certainly to remove chairman and lists of people out of the organization because they didn't watch what was going on. But interestingly enough, through everything they quote and talk about in this article, there was no mention of the fact that actually there are just fewer teenagers to go buy. In other words, it isn't just about buying trends and what students, whether they want to put more money into their cell phone than they do another pair of jeans. The sheer numbers in the buying populace is precipitously less than anything we knew before. Demographics, that's the point that we need to watch for as we look into this. So the great talent war, demographic shifts in motion and what we must do to prepare and succumb and advance, not succumb. I'd ask each of you here, we'll continue with part two next week, is to think hard about, do you really understand the numbers that are in your organization, the age group, although it's not necessarily politically correct to talk about age, but understand where you are and how your workforce is shifting. And we'll catch up with you on second part two. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.